Actually, right. we've been recording for the last 12 minutes already.
Yeah, okay.
So we got a nice.
Because, you know, this is what it's like with podcasts. It's never just about radio-type broadcasting silent ears. You really do feel as... This feels like a very vivacious ASMR, which is very not ASMR at all. Because you're basically in their ears. You're in their ears, you're in each other's living rooms. Most people are recording podcasts in each living room. Yeah, I treat podcasting as phone sex, basically. Yeah, I'm Yen. I've known Mark and Carolyn for some years now, since my very first major public art project with other artists in Singapore. And I'm an artist, but I've only been for the last, how many years? How many years, Mark? 7 years? Mm-hmm. So I'm a newbie artist. We are born again normal human beings, Carolyn. We've left law, and now we are just doing creative work.
Wow, that's a very good way. Yeah, that's an excellent way of putting it. Born again human beings, yes. Previously, some legal eagles tucked away somewhere, just like, in pain, in a lot of pain.
In purgatory, right?
Yeah, in a lot of pain and in purgatory, and then just thinking, how can we punch our way out of this one? And we did. But 2013, you mean that's when you started practicing art with displacements? And the project that Yen was talking about is indeed displacements. And then, well, before we go any further, maybe Yen, you want to just describe a little bit about what displacements was? And this took place in 2013.
Mm. So my granddad's house was being demolished. In Singapore, it's in this place called Wilkie Terrace, which is somewhere in the city. So this big-ass pre-war house with very bad electrical wiring, and it was going to get acquired by this land developer to turn into like a block of condos. So I had a month to do something there, and I thought, hey, you know, we had space. Why not just use the space to give room to not just art, but a space for dialogue as well? Because during that time, the white paper was happening. It was about 6 months to a year after the Singapore's population paper, and people were really thinking about the idea of change and how Singapore is changing, or demographic is changing. We're going to have to deal with a lot more people coming to Singapore, and people were semi-freaking out about it. So just having a space to not make a point, but rather to just say, hey, let's just come together. Let's call it something. Let's directly acknowledge that things in the city do change, including my granddad's house being demolished. But let's just sit with that change. Let's just kind of go, yeah, sure, you know, we are going to be somewhere else. The idea of home is going to be more dispersed.
Hello and welcome to the Mackerel Podcast, where we talk about culture, literature, and other interesting things. I'm Carolyn Wee, and with me today is Mark Nair.
Hello. So this is part 3 of our series of conversations entitled How Are Things on Your Island? So far, we've chatted with Michelle Villarosa, who's in Siargao in the Philippines, and we've chatted with Ashley Sanderson, who's currently on Gili Trawangan in Indonesia. Ashley's been there for more than 12 weeks now, and it's likely that she'll be bouncing over to Bali in the next couple of days. So we do hope Ashley has a safe voyage.
For listeners who might be tuning into this particular series of conversations only now, allow me to give you some background to these conversations. This is the time of the coronavirus. All 6 billion of us on this planet are living with it, around it, and in it. And it's precisely in apocalyptic times like this that one would think being on an island would be the best thing ever, right?
Well, it really depends which island you're on.
Truly. So, Mark and I shoot the shit with artist Yen Pang on this little red dot that we call home, Singapore. And as you could tell from the cackling in the intro, there's plenty to laugh about. I mean, it's better to laugh than cry all the time, lah.
Yeah, so why are you crying?
Well, claustrophobia, in one word, because we have no hills to head to. This is an island after all. I know it doesn't look like an island very much anymore. It certainly doesn't feel like an island, but for all intents and purposes, it is. And it's a tropical island plus. But we don't have hills to run to because we're a city. We're just one big city.
We do have lots of parks, green spaces.
You call those hills, ah? Are those, you know, really? Yeah.
I
to run to, you know, when you just need to be alone, when you want some peace and quiet.
Well, it is really hard to be alone in this city. I mean, it's just the density of it, right? The sheer density. And I guess also because we can't travel, and so many Singaporeans depend on getting out regularly,
right?
As an outlet,
as an escape. It's a literal escape. We can't even go to Malaysia anymore. Not anymore. I'm not saying forever and ever they're not letting Singaporeans back in. Like, although I'm sure if they could, they would. But that's not practical. So at some point, they're going to let us back in, but not just yet, lah. You know, and so we haven't been able to go in there for the last 2.5 months.
And that's been unprecedented. So I think people are feeling the walls closing in.
Right. And most Singaporeans, I mean, a good 80% of the population lives in a flat, like we do. We don't have a garden. We certainly don't have rolling grassy slopes for a backyard. Yeah, we've got concrete 5-foot ways and tarmac and basketball courts and the CC behind us.
That sounds about as appealing as the MRI machine I was in earlier this week.
Ayo, what were you doing in an MRI machine? Please tell us.
I have a shoulder injury, and I got an MRI done to figure out what exactly was wrong. So I think I did an MRI like when I was in the army many, many, many years ago, and I can't remember what the experience was like. And I was like, oh, that's an MRI. It's no big deal. And then I was like, you know, the MRI attendant was like, oh, are you comfortable? And I was like, no, actually, my neck is slightly lower than my body. So could you like get something to help me prop it up? And I was like being all atas and everything. And it's like, yeah, okay, now I'm really comfortable. And then they're like, oh, we've got headphones for you. It's like, what kind of music would you like? I'm like, yeah, let's do some rock music. And I can like, you know, because when I work, I listen to rock music and it's like a kind of white noise and it filters out. So I thought, yes, I can do that. And then when they wheeled me in, I was like, the ceiling is too close. The music is too loud. The headphones are too tight. And before they started, I was like, I am freaking out. I was really breathing very heavily. I was like, I'm not going to be able to last half an hour here. So I said, I need to come out. And then I took off the headphones. I told them, I'd rather listen to the sound of the machine and please lower my head so I'm not so close to the ceiling. And I was fine after that. I did not freak out. So I was really glad for that. And I learned to enjoy the sounds of the machine. It sounds weird, but you know, if you can't fight it, you have to be with it.
And it doesn't sound weird at all, because I think that's pretty much what Singaporeans have done to adapt, so to speak. Mm. As in, we do adapt to the low ceilings. We do adapt to the fact that there's all this ambient noise around us and it's not going to go away. You won't find a place in Singapore where there's absolute quiet. I don't know.
Cemetery.
Even then, or a church, because not many people are going to church anymore, right? Okay, empty the pews, right. So that's why I feel claustrophobic, and that's why I do cry a lot.
You know that phrase, 酸甜苦辣? You know,
yes.
It's not just 甜, 甜 is just sweet. You think life is sweet all the time, you know? What ever happened to, you know, 酸 and then 苦 and then 辣,
bitter,
辣 that,
Suantian. No, also sour, sweet, bitter, spicy.
That is the fullness of life. By talking about Netflix, Netflix very good, right? You know, like, oh, decentralizing TV production across the globe. That's great. And what it does is that it allows you to tell stories. So what's the latest documentary that came out quite recently, The Kingmaker? Let's look at one documentary and see how we have a very talented, you know, we talk about talented documentarian telling the story of a public figure in Asia. A story that's already been told before, very competently, by a fellow Asian. But there was no acknowledgement by Lauren Davidson of the previous documentary. So here we have Netflix kind of like putting up this story told by someone else. And to relate it back to our situation, here we in Singapore, we have smart people telling our story. We have people who go to Ivy League schools, people who came from single-parent families and then go to Oxford and Cambridge and came back with their postdocs and everything. They're competent, they're smart, and they're telling our stories for us. What is this about? Are we not competent to tell our own stories? Do we not trust our own voices? That's what I'm saying. Why do we need to sit here and then just go, you know, I don't think I'm smart enough to just tell you what my life is like. Because if I tell you what my life is like, there'll be someone above me telling me that my own story is wrong. And we've seen that happening. We've seen proxy wars being fought in newspaper over what the experience, the subjective experience of a poor person in Singapore is like. And the kerfuffle that came out after a book, which I won't mention because I don't want to get the writer in any more trouble. But the truth is that the government fought the proxy war through the press by trying to get like senior social workers to write letters saying, hey, look, poor people are irresponsible. It's their fault that they're poor and we can't do anything to help them, but we're trying very hard instead of just sitting down and listening to what it's like to live their own lives. What is my experience as a human being, as a Singaporean? And for me, now I'm older, what I care about is being kind rather than being right. If it means being kind towards the civil servants who are working their asses off for the rest of us, that's great. If it's also being kind to the well-intentioned MPs that are trying to represent us and do the best for us, then that's great also. But I would not use anyone's good intentions to shut anyone up and say, you have no right to be angry because we have all the answers sorted out for you and all you have to do is to just be silent and listen to us.
But I tell you what else makes me cry. Mm-hmm. As much as I love Singapore, born and bred here, I can very happily say that I'm a patriot, okay? I love my country. But I just wish that those who purport to lead us would give us a little bit more credit in terms of being able to think as a populace, giving us the space, as Yen has talked about, giving us the space to write our own stories rather than just force-feed the narrative to us all the time and say, okay, this is it. This is the story of Singapore. This is your story. Okay? And these are the guidelines. Please make sure you colour inside the lines. Don't go out because you go out, it just looks very messy, very ugly, and we will punish you for it.
So why do you think they don't trust us? Because this is clearly about trust, you know, and they don't think that they have a trustworthy populace.
I think they made us that way. I it sounds so sinister, but it's almost as though they want us to remain a little bit apathetic and they want us to remain unquestioning, just so it'll be easier to get things done, lah. And truly, I mean, most times if you have a compliant populace, of course it's very easy to get things done, especially if, you know, with a population like ours is quite small, right? It's easy to manage.
I guess it's also this word, convenience, right? Mm. And everything's justified in the name of convenience. And that's a minor god that rules in this country.
Actually, there's several gods lah. There's convenience, there's efficiency, there's productivity.
That's right? Kukuchiaoness.
Kukuchiaoness is like when you drive to somebody else's housing estate and you finish drinking your bloody sugar cane in a plastic cup and you think nobody is looking, and just before you're about to drive away, you leave your bloody empty sugarcane plastic cup on the blue recycling bin. Ah, you just put it there.
And then...
Think that you can get away with it.
But then...
What happens?
I am downstairs doing my recycling. And then I see that. And I walk over...
You walk over to the Kukuchiao?
And confront him. And ask, is that a dustbin?
Ah, then... What is he going to say? He has to say no already, right?
He has to say no. Mm. And then he has to say, sorry, sorry, sorry. And then he has to walk very quickly over and retrieve it. Because I'm staring through him.
And you're wearing your army singlet.
I'm wearing an army singlet. So definitely this fellow is a Singaporean.
Angry Indian man.
Angry bearded Indian man with an army singlet. Don't mess. Not in my estate. Not on my street.
Not on my watch.
But okay. They don't do that. I mean, there isn't that kind of hard edge coming down on people when it comes to things like the environment, environmentalism. In fact, it's all left up to your civil society, which is very weird, I find. But they come down really hard on things like your public service campaigns for squeezing into the MRT during rush hour.
Right. Yeah.
And what do they do with that? You know, the kind of messaging. And I have a huge issue with the messaging. It's infantilizing messaging.
Please tell us what the messaging looks like. Describe what the messaging looks like.
I'm sure we've all seen the little people called like Bag Down Benny.
Hush, hush, Hannah.
Yeah. And they love these easy, what they think is...
And they're cartoon characters, like, first of all, I mean, they're cartoon characters with big heads.
But
Very, very big heads, you know, tiny, tiny limbs and, you know, just look ridiculous and all that. But they are certainly... Okay, other than gender, you can't tell what race they might be. You can't tell what age even. Although, I mean, there's some suggestions. For example, if you got a couple of people earrings and permed hair, then you're possibly an auntie lah. But then, hey, you know, if I wanted to go and get permed hair, why not, right? But so you know that there is this like, okay, no, yeah, it's everybody. This applies to everybody. Yeah. So if you want to set a good example, or you want to be the model citizen, then you be like Bag Down Benny. You put your bag down. You don't carry your backpack down there, and then people are just like that, you know, or smashing your bag into people's faces and that kind of thing. Or hush, hush, Hannah. I mean, you're listening to your music really loudly. So please, lah, be a proper citizen and behave. Learn to behave in the MRT.
So in other words, markers of social behavior and what is appropriate are determined solely by your actions. You are defined by your actions. You're not defined by anything else but your actions. And that is how you are to behave, the kind of propriety that they demand. And you see that also in other campaigns. You know, it's just how you act. We don't really want to, you know, push at identity, because identity for them is a construct. So when you look at a public service campaign, like I think you just shared with me this gov.sg safety creatures campaign.
Oh my god, yeah.
And that was...
A lion?
Yes,
you have... An otter? A monkey?
And a cat. Yeah. How come
no
dog?
I don't know. Yeah, that's why. I mean, a dog is more common than a lion, no? On the streets of Singapore?
Yeah, normally, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, if they were trying to get like the cross-section of the type of animal life you would see in Singapore, Yalah.
I don't know about... I mean, you should have a rat in there.
Definitely must have rats.
Yeah, yeah. Rats, pigeon.
Mm.
Why no miners. Rats? Why no pigeon? Why no miner?
Mm.
Right? Why no cockroach? Why no lizard? I mean, the otters have captured the public imagination probably in a way that is not proportionate to their numbers. And then your monkeys are kind of like restricted to MacRitchie.
Bukit Timah.
Yeah, Bukit Timah. Right. Cats, okay, cool. Cats are cool. They deserve to be in there. What the heck is a lion doing there?
I don't know, seriously. It's just Singapura.
There are 8 scenarios for safety creatures. Things like mask up, going out to tapau, air 5, you know, so you don't actually give a high five, by air 5. And things like stay home. And the lion is in 3 out of 8 of these representations. 37.5% feature a lion. How many lions do we have in Singapore? Seriously, what are they all doing?
This cartoon, Safety Creatures, is supposed to tell us... I think that the key word here is to tell us how to behave. Just like Back Down Benny and Hush Hush Hannah told us how to behave in the MRT. The lion, the otter, the monkey and the cat... Sounds like the start to a bad joke, right?
Or one of those Chinese tales, you know.
Oh gosh, yeah. One of those proverbs, is it?
Yeah.
The idioms, things, yeah. The 成语 la. Anyway, so these 4 animals purport to tell us how we should behave during phase 2.
I think we've got some growing pains to experience in Singapore because we've come to a stage where we cannot fall back upon the old narratives of the 5 C's in Singapore,
yeah.
These tangible metrics. So we are trying to rediscover ourselves. And so if we want to see change, let's look at how we can be effective about it. And just as a kid is growing up as well, what is effective is using both negative and positive reinforcement. So when they do something good, I also want to give them a lot of credit for it, specifically for certain policies. And at the same time, when I don't agree with certain things, I will be clear in my communication as to why I, as a single person, disagree with certain things.
So again, it's the telling. I think it's the telling. And perhaps one of the reasons why it upsets us so much is that we would appreciate a little bit less telling and perhaps more engaging.
Well, let's think about another kind of way of naming, not just the messaging, right, but a naming. So, for example, the budget that we've had. We've had 4 budgets this year. Well, what were the names again?
Unity, Resilience, Solidarity, Fortitude.
Yeah, which sounds like, your secondary school houses.
Ah.
Right, Unity House, Fortitude House. Something like that.
Why this obsession with wanting to call something something? I mean, can it not just be the emergency COVID-19 budget, something like that?
Yeah, budget 1, budget 2.
Or phase 1, phase 2. Yeah, okay, it sounds very villain, James Bond villain. But still, you know, like, why does it have to have a name?
Because it gives it a reason.
For existing.
Actually, you know, if you think about
it,
right?
Or it emotes something. So it's supposed to fire up some kind of emotion in people and say, yes, I will be resilient. Yes, we do have solidarity here.
No, maybe it's thematic, right? Maybe the content of the budget broadly alludes to a sense of resilience.
Yes. Yes, of course it does. But why must you call it that? I mean, I don't understand. Why must you complicate things? Why can't you just leave it as the emergency COVID-19 budget?
Because I think we have a lot of public funds that need to be spent when it comes to marketing.
Oh, right. You got to give the creative agencies...
some work to do.
Okay.
So, you know, and a lot of these agencies are dead weight. You know, they don't
You had a better experience with them.
Yeah, I mean, like...
Not so long ago, right?
Not so long ago. Earlier this year. Like, they literally become the go-between for the client, a government client, and us and me, I mean, as a creative. So, what is their value add? They barely even came up with a... Oh, they did. They came up with a schedule for delivery of the different things that were needed, but it was a schedule that existed only in their mind and didn't make any sense when it came down to actually delivering what was needed. So
wait, so it was it a workflow? I mean, or was it supposed to be a workflow? Did they come up with a workflow plan?
They did, but they came up with a workflow plan in consultation with nobody. You know, so it's their own self workflow plan. And it's to satisfy their job as a, I don't know, a project manager, I guess.
Mm-mm.
You know, and then what scares me is like, oh no, they are the payment's gonna go through them. So how long will they take to process something? You know, it becomes an extra step. And in the end, we worked directly with the client, and that was fine. We didn't need the intervening agency.
No, but how did they intervene? Were they irritating about it? Like, you know, it's like, oh, can you please send me this? Can you please send me that? And I need to see it before it goes to the client, blah, blah, blah.
They actually ended up bugging the client for a meeting. And the client was like, but we already had a meeting and we were fine and we're doing all this. So why are you asking me for another meeting to catch up on things that you don't know about?
But it's a meeting to follow up on the previous meeting, what?
No, which they weren't in.
Oh,
because,
I see.
Because they had been cut out. And they're the third wheel, right? What do you call it? Dear. The third leg, the third party, the lamppost. Yeah. It was hilarious. Because in the end, the client said, look, you guys back off. Let me work directly with the creatives and we'll sort it out.
Well, I guess it's a combination of factors, lah. So it's one, thinking that the populace are idiots. And two, is like... Well, it's some form of employment creation, I suppose. And then if you've got an agency who's on a retainer, then you got to give them something to do, I suppose.
Actually, right? That's it. The retainer that is the issue.
Hey, if our government's biggest flaw is that it's condescending and arrogant, that's not that bad, you know.
You know, yeah.
I would take an arrogant government over a corrupt one any day, but. We just have to make sure that this arrogance doesn't breed complacency, because we have seen that happen in the past where a very efficient technocracy, like the UK in Thatcher's time, slowly, slowly bred cronyism and a very dysfunctional parliament. So we do have to see how we can not be so patronizing so that it doesn't breed complacency. That is all.
Right.
And we are in a very fluid market right now.
Yeah.
So things are, you know, project to project. So everybody needs to be flexible. But certain institutions just cannot move in time.
Right. Also because the certain institutions are also kind of overweight, lumbering, just sort of not... quite with it, not as nimble, simply because they have all these layers, literally, right? All these layers of bureaucracy, all these layers of, well, this person or this party needs to sign off on here, and then that party needs to do this, and then there must be a proper flow of things. You cannot anyhow cut short somebody and blah, 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 blah. But just generally being overweight, lah.
And a lot of this is a holdover from a paper-based age of records and things like that. But then one of the things about going digital is not to replicate that degree of bureaucracy digitally, but to ensure that you have like a one-step process that cuts through everything. Mm-hmm. And that is the value of going digital and going online. And some sectors of the economy do manage to do that. And others are just... Yeah, like you said, overweight.
Yeah, overweight. Like so many of the population at the moment.
What do we learn from Ricky Gervais? That 1/3 of the world is obese.
Obese, and then 1/3 of the world is starving. So basically, you can you know la, which third is eating the food of the other third la. Yeah. So and it's a bit strange. I mean, if we get back to this whole island discussion and being overweight, is interesting because with an island, or when you think about island life, I don't know, for me at least, I envision, you know, healthy, sun-kissed skin, sun-kissed bodies running around the place, being active, doing stuff, not lumbering or oafish or worse, pale and pasty.
Or stuck in offices, and when you get out of the office, it's nighttime, and you don't see the sun. And ordering food in and things like that.
And the thing is also, there is a certain dislike for the sun, in the sense that people don't want to be darker skinned than they already are, for example. Or if they are of a very pale complexion, oh my God, they'd rather die than turn brown, you know, and look like a peasant or something. And so it's like, oddly enough, and I've said so before in an earlier, in Michelle's podcast, I think, where, oh no, I think it was in Ashley's podcast where I said, almost 40% of Singaporeans, according to a National Population Health Survey, almost 40% of Singaporeans are vitamin D deficient. How? We're on an island, a tropical island. We have sunshine.
We also have walkways.
Oh my God, yeah, we do.
And people can get from their flat all the way to the bus station or the MRT station without actually being exposed.
Without seeing sky.
Yes. So, while it protects them from rain, which is the ostensible, you know, point of the shelter, it also keeps them from the sun.
Ayo.
And that is...
And so many of our damning. So many of our walkways are underground as well.
This is true.
Underground, air-conditioned. I mean, underground shopping malls, lah, basically, right? So if you... Imagine if you found yourself working underground. Yikes.
We are bubbling ourselves.
Well, and we're in concrete all day long.
Yeah.
So that's another phenomenon of the Singapore island life. And I'm doing these very giant inverted commas because...
Air quotes, yes.
There's nothing island life about it at all. First of all, we're so disconnected from the earth, right? We don't have our own food. Well, okay, wait. I don't know. I won't say we don't have it. But we are very dependent still, even though we do have some urban farms, even though we do have like a stash somewhere of food reserves and stuff. Apparently, we can produce enough eggs for every single Singaporean.
For how long?
I don't know. But wow. Yeah, go Google it, lah. Just find out. Lah. But we
also have a lot of light.
We're still dependent on imports. We're heavily dependent on imports. So... And because we live in concrete all day, surrounded by concrete all day, we don't see the sun. There's no connection with the earth. We don't have hills to hit to, right? As we were saying at the beginning, we don't have hills to hit to. We're so disconnected from the very earth that we walk on. And it's really sad because...
Even the sand in our buildings doesn't come from our country.
No, we have to buy sand from somewhere else. And... you know, I look at Michelle's pictures on Instagram of Siargao, and I'm so envious because it's just lush jungle. Now, of course, yeah, la, some troublemakers would probably come along and say, "Hey, what you want? You just go and live. Yeah, you go la. You go and live in the jungle la, where there's no this, no that, no Netflix la, no this, no that, blah 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 blah, no creature comforts, etc." Yeah, I get it. I understand, and I'm not bitching about it. I'm not whinging. I'm just saying that it is sad that islanders, us Singapore islanders, don't live an island life at all. We are so disconnected from it, so completely disconnected to the point where many of us cannot cannot even tahan the sight of millipedes, you know.
But I must say, I have been enjoying the growth of vegetation, the grass, you know, the untrimmed hedges. It's been so, so refreshing. And when we go on a long walks and then we see this whole area that's overgrown to the extent that it's looking abandoned, you know, it warms my heart that nature will still find a way. Nature doesn't stop and say, oh, this is a city. Okay, fine. You know, I'm moving on. No, it will push up through the cracks. It will dislodge things. And I'm hoping that we will find a way to work with nature, not against nature, not suppress it, but to give it more space in this country.
Well, we have a few activists. Well, I don't know whether you can call them activists. Activists, it's a very loaded word. Okay, but certainly these are very environmentally friendly youngsters aged between 22 and 27. And they have contributed essays to do with the environment in Singapore and to do with Singaporeans' relationship with the environment. And it's interesting because the definition of environment is actually quite broad here. And all these essays appear in a book that is published by Ethos Books. It's entitled Eating Chili Crab in the Anthropocene. In next week's podcast, I'll be speaking with two young eco-warriors. And I say young because they are well below 30. Young, bright, and still very hopeful individuals who talk a little bit about trying to reconnect with the earth that they walk on, and also how they live the zero waste life. So what else would you like to say about island life, Mark?
I live on a very bright island. I mean,
and that's not about, I mean, that's not Smart Nation bright, right?
Well, yeah. Smart Nation, never mind, let's not go there. No, there's a lot of light on the island. You know, it's a city that never sleeps. And it's not sunlight, right? We have
light pollution.
Light pollution, yes.
Sadly, that's another thing about this Singapore island life. It never gets dark here.
And what does it mean for the human body, the human psyche, when there's always light? And you do not really feel that sense of dark. And dark, what does darkness bring in terms of rest, in terms of quieting the mind, the eyes? What does it mean to power down your body in a way, and to find that sense of solitude? And all that is something that's lost. Has been lost for a while now, because our streetlights are on throughout the night. We have 24-hour food places. We have Mustafa, which runs 24 hours. Because of the productivity that the city demands, there are certain things that are going on all the time. There are cycles that are beyond and outside of natural cycles of the body, natural cycles of the land. The cycles of the city are alien to cycles of the land. So not only are we living in concrete, in unnatural materials, we're also living on unnatural cycles.
And this is precisely why we need hills to head to. Thanks very much for listening. That was the final part of our series, How Are Things on Your Island? We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did producing it. If you'd like to get in touch, please write us an email, hello@mackerel.life. Bye for now and stay healthy.